Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
I want to start with the LA Clippers. The Clippers introduced Kawhi Leonard and Paul George yesterday. Thought it was a hell of a scene. I loved it. A hell of a scene because the media was there. Clipper fans were there. Hell, Clipper Daryl was there. Future Hall of Famer Doc Rivers was there. The legendary Lee Jenkins was there. The only guy that I could even mention in the same sentence with Lee Jenkins is Sam Cassell. My man Sam Cassell is the best. Lee Jenkins and Sam Cassell sitting beside one another in the crowd. I always admired Lee Jenkins, but never more so than I did in that moment. Him posted up with Sam Cassell. What I'm trying to say is there was a ton of star power in that building, and there should be. That was an awesome moment for the Clippers and for Clipper fans, the kind of moment you dream of. So let me ask you this, Clipper fans, can you actually believe this? You've got Kawhi Leonard. You've got Paul George. They're sitting up on a stage together. And then you've got these guys holding Clipper jerseys up. I mean, is this real life? Not only holding jerseys, but Doc Rivers rearranged the two of them so the jerseys lined up for 213. You know, the zipper, 213, the ultimate LA zip code. It is all coming together. And there was a lot of juice there for Clipper fans and a ton of salt for Laker fans, like Paul George, when he said, quote, "It seems like this was destiny that we were supposed to play together," end quote. Wait a minute. I thought it was destiny for Paul George to come back home and play for the Lakers. But that's not what he was saying. Talk about some salt. How about Kawhi pointing out that he knows the Lakers get more attention, but over the last couple of years, you tell Kawhi who's been the better team.
As far as the last few years, as far as a basketball standpoint, the Clippers have been better.
Aha, ha, ha, ha. Except he's right. He's right, Laker fans. Don't even bother with that one. You know he's right. Or how about George saying that while he was a Kobe guy growing up, overall, he was really a Clippers fan. And Kawhi saying that he also was a Clipper fan growing up. How about George saying, we're going to make it happen. L.A. our way. That's the new Clipper motto, L.A. our way. I mean, I can keep going with some of these quotes from the presser about Kawhi thanking the Raptors, about Paul George talking about coming home. But you can get all that stuff at pretty much any presser. Why don't we step back for a moment? Why don't we look at what you cannot get at any other press conference? There was something you had yesterday that you just cannot get anywhere else. The one thing that you can't get anywhere else is Steve Ballmer. Stephen Anthony Ballmer. There is your real baller. There's your real star. As great as Kawhi Leonard is, as great as Paul George is, and they are two of the best two-way players in the game, a couple of future Hall of Famers. But the real star yesterday was the former high school basketball team manager. My guy brings it, and he brings it hard. He's locked in. 100, 200, 600%. Boom! Dude, that's on a normal day. That's not on his best day. That's on a normal day. So, what was he going to do yesterday on what had to be one of his best days? What does 700 or 800% look like? I'll tell you what it looks like. It looks like this. It looks like starting a presser like this.
I have these notes, but I gotta say, I'm just fired up to be here today. It's pretty cool. Pretty damn cool. Woo!
Damn, I missed this guy. It's pretty cool. It's pretty damn cool. Woo! That's your new alarm sound right there. Download that. That's what you want to wake up to. Select it in your phone and have that thing go off when you need to roll out every single morning. You'll be ready to bring it every day. 100, 200, 600%. Boom!
Pretty cool. Pretty damn cool. Woo!
And the looks on Kawhi and Paul George's faces when he busted out with that, woo! It's priceless. If that does not work as an alarm, Ballmer had another one for you.
First of all, I'm pumped to say hello as Clippers to Paul and Kawhi. Come on! Come on! Come on! Get up! Come on, get up! If you were psyched
on! This dude's incredible. Get up! Get up if you're as psyched as I am!
Come on, get up!
Yeah, look, I love the toughness of Kawhi and of PG and of Steve B. What a showman. Do you remember when this guy took over the Clippers? He did so in one of the ugliest situations ever. This guy brought so much energy, so much life to the team. And the fact is, it has not dulled with time. If anything, he's gotten more hyped. He's gotten more amped. And the great thing about this guy, too, he's not making it about him. He's not showing up front and center and acting like this. He's picked his spots. You know, I've seen a bunch of headlines about how Steve Ballmer, quote, lost his mind at the press conference yesterday. Wrong. Dead wrong. This guy didn't lose his mind. He brought the heat. He brought the passion. He brought the freaking thunder. He's acting like a guy who loves his basketball team. And his team is having the best day. No, the best month. No, they're having the best summer ever. What, you want this guy up there and just nodding and smiling and speaking in platitudes and cliches? Hell no. I want this guy doing him. I want this guy up there screaming. I want this guy ripping up his notes and yelling it from the heart. I want this guy telling everybody to get off their ass, get on their feet, because they should be on their feet. They should be on their feet. The Clippers have never had a moment like this. This is so much better than Lob City. Better players, better guys, better team, better situation, better energy, better chemistry. I say that because, well, it couldn't have been any worse than it was back in the day with Blake Griffin and CP3 et al. This is better. It's different. And by different, I mean better. Even Doc Rivers would tell you that. Doc said, quote, I never felt like I could get that Lob City group to understand that this was their time, the urgency of it. When we beat Golden State in the 2013-14 playoffs the following year, Golden State decided this was their time. I don't think we decided that. We just showed up and wanted to try to win, but that's not enough, end quote. Let me wrap this by saying, translation, that crew was about the wrong stuff. Namely, themselves. That crew was just too cool to actually do the work. That crew was not smart enough to realize the opportunity they had in front of them. And that's why we busted that crew up and shipped their asses out of here. Because that crew didn't get it. But this one does. Hey, Doc, I'm just paraphrasing for you. They just added two MVP candidates who feel like the absolute perfect fit for this team and their culture. Two guys who are going to get after it on both ends of the floor. A guy who just won a championship and a guy who badly wants to win a championship. And they're both from the area and they want to make history and they want to win a world championship for a franchise that has never sniffed one while punking Big Brother down the hall at the same time.
Brother.
It says right here, right now, the Clippers are the better team in LA, not the Lakers. Better team, better organization, better culture, better owner, better plan, better everything. It's all flipped. It has all flipped. Or in the words of this billionaire slash legend, pretty cool. Pretty damn cool. Woo!
Pretty cool. Pretty damn cool. Woo!
Hawaii head coach Nick Rolovich is my guest. Nick, it's good to have you back. How are you?
Good morning, Romy. I'm having a great day myself. I'm glad you guys are having fun.
My man, we're having so much fun. I know you are too, Nick.
Hey, how about aloha to the clones now? I love the clones every year. This is a great deal.
My man, clones, hit up the coach right now. And aloha to the clones. And I love you starting it off like that. All right, so you tweeted yesterday, speaking of Twitter, happy anniversary to my wife. Now let's go start football camp. Nick, bring me up to date. How is life for you these days? And how fired up are you for this upcoming season?
Are you kidding me? Training camp starts today. This is what I think everyone who loves football is involved with. This is like our Christmas. And you got to love this game to play it. You got to love this game to coach it. It's too hard. It'll crush your soul. But there's so many great things that come from it as far as the memories, the experiences, and the friendships, man. This is young men really kind of excelling in their lives and doing something special. I'm just fortunate to be a part of it.
I like it. Prepare for summer road trips. Before you head out, visit O'Reilly Auto Parts. Simple preventative maintenance before you hit the road will ensure a safe journey during the summer months ahead. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. Nick Rolovich joining us. Now, every time you and I talk, we talk about Mountain West Media Day, but the truth is, I mean, I would talk to you no matter what happens at Media Day, But in previous years, you did show up with an Elvis impersonator, a Britney Spears impersonator, and this time you rolled with a fortune teller. How did that idea come to be, and how did that go?
Well, I wasn't going to force anything. I didn't really have a great idea. 2 days before, they told me, hey, the preseason polls are coming out, and I'm on my way to Vegas, and I say, well, I'm going to figure out, you know, the media polls, you know, it's, I appreciate their effort, but they don't mean a whole lot to the team. So I said, let me bring a fortune teller, and she'll tell me really what the deal is.
And what did she say?
She said, I did tarot card reading. I picked a very auspicious card. It was a card representing dreams coming true, and no real specifics as far as the league goes, but that gave me a lot of confidence getting back on the plane, coming back to Hawaii.
Good, Nick. You picked the right card. Now, this time last year, you were coming off a tough season, and you were facing a tough schedule. It opened up with a trip to Colorado State, followed by Navy, and then Rice. As you look back now, where was the team at this point last year, and how does it feel compared to this point this year?
Well, the coaching staff and the leaders coming into last year deserve a ton of credit for pulling this thing back together. We had, you know, I would say turmoil. I mean, we weren't aligned very well in the coaching staff, and that leaked down into the players. These players aren't stupid. You know, they can see if things aren't working right, and they're very observant. And I apologize that they had to go through it, but I respect the heck out of the guys who hung in there and pulled this thing back together and really, you know, did something that made Hawaii proud. And that's a big part of why I took this job, is I owe Hawaii, you know, for what they gave me, everything in my life.
And I respect that answer a lot, Nick. You saying that, hey, listen, we had a problem on the coaching staff, and it did trickle down to the players, and they know they're not dumb. They know it's up. But in the season opener, then you go on the road to Fort Collins, and you jump out to a 37-7 lead over Colorado State. How huge was it, not just for that game, but for the entire season, for you to come out and explode out of the gate like that?
It was pretty big. It was pretty big for our players. You know, they worked hard, and then to see, hey, this stuff does work. If we play together, we play unselfishly, we play for a greater cause. All those things, and it just kind of steamrolled. And those are the type of things. When you see young men have that realization, you know that they're going to take that lesson and really do something outside of football for the rest of their lives. As a father, as a husband, as a leader in their community, they're going to do great things because they understand that concept. And that's why this is the greatest game in the world.
I mean, you learn things in football that – you can translate into so many other things in your life. But from a football standpoint, too, when you start the season 6-1 and you go through a tough stretch at one point, and then you come back and you win the final two games of the regular season, and that gives you 8 wins on the year, which was the most since 2010, and then you follow that up with a trip to a bowl game, knowing what happened the previous year, the things you and I talked about, how proud of you were everybody involved in the program last year to have that kind of a season?
One of the greater accomplishments. I mean, it wasn't a, you know, national championship, or, you know, we weren't hosting trophies up at the end of the day, but we came together, we hung together, and it was as a human element in the game. It was very gratifying to see those kids and the coaches that bought in and believed to really feel good about what they did, and they should feel proud. It was a hard deal.
Now, when you and I talked last year, Nick, we talked about going back to the run-and-shoot offense. So how good did it feel to get back to that, and did it feel like getting back to the program's roots and identity?
Very much so. That was a decision I probably waited a couple of years for, or 2 years too long. But it's something that I feel like is more who I am naturally. I think it's got a real nice relationship with this university. I think it's something people identify Hawaii football with. And that was, you know, it was as big of a – because the system works. People like seeing the ball flying through the air, you know, and our kids bought in and really studied and tried to be the best they could at it, our coaching staff as far as knowledge of the offense. But you're seeing it in the NFL. You're seeing it, you know, people been like June Jones, Miles Davis throwing the ball around for a long time. And you see it in the air raid deal, but now you're seeing it, you know, creep up into the NFL. And I think because the fans like watching exciting football. They like seeing that ball in the air.
especially when you have the right guy spinning it. Your quarterback, Cole McDonald, was coming off a year where he threw for nearly 4,000 yards and 36 TDs, Nick, and he did it in his first season as the starter, and he did all of that while dealing with some injuries. Now he's on watch list for the Davey O'Brien Award, the Maxwell Award. What does the next step look like for him?
Just being more consistent in his reads. I think there was, you know, and I'm happy with him because I didn't have to tell him. He came in, watched his whole season, and the first thing he says is, "Man, did I miss a lot?" And that's okay. That's part of the deal, you know, experimenting on, you know, how am I going to manipulate this zone player? You know, kind of finding his own personality in this offense. And for him to do the self, you know, reflection and really study it himself and come up with those answers gives me a lot of hope. And you saw another level when we got in the spring ball. And that doesn't mean he's going to be, you know, great in fall. He's still got to do the work, which he will. But it gives, you know, you feel like you're on the right path when you got a mature kid that has ability and has a desire to be great and is really bought into the culture. Guy got the Hawaiian Islands tattooed on his forearm. He's got dreads. You know, he's part Filipino. The guy's the Renaissance, man. It's awesome.
Hawaii head coach Nick Rolovich joining us. That's who you want to go to battle with. Now, it should probably come as no surprise. Nick, you and Mike Leach have been known to hang out a bit. I got to know, when you guys talk, how much are you talking about scheme and how much of it is about ancient religion and pirates?
Not a lot about scheme. The biggest scheme we talk about is the difference of, you know, how much he gets the running back out in the routes, and we don't do that as much. More philosophy of the mindset of running an offense like this, and that was really what I wanted to get out of our first meeting. I don't know what he would say, but, you know, I feel like we've become pretty good friends. He texted me last night. You know, we're texting last night about, what were we talking about? I don't know. So I love the randomness, and we could go from, you know, he's a big fan of raccoons, and I can respect that. I had a raccoon scare when I was young, so I'm not as big of a fan as raccoons, but, you know, it's just a real enjoyable conversation for me. Now, my wife, and I'm not sure about his wife, but they don't really like how much we talk, because we can go for hours.
Nick, now, in California, where I live, we had one on our roof the other night, a raccoon, and I didn't really know what to make of it. And luckily, he just went away because, you know, I'm not going to deal with that. Like, I could try, but I wouldn't know what to do. You mentioned you had a scare as a kid. What happened? Yeah, what happened to you as a kid with a raccoon?
Backyard, you know, nighttime, the lights are on inside, you can't see out. I turn the lights on outside. There's this, it looked like a bear. Staring me right in the eyes, raccoon growled at me through the glass window. Still freaked me out. And so I'm pretty happy there's no raccoons here on the island.
Dude, they're mean, right?
They're mean. They're very smart. And you'd be impressed with, you know, how, you know, I think you call them paws, but they act like hands. And they're very clever little creatures.
Yeah, they are. I don't want any raccoon giving me the hands. Giving me the hands. Now, you spent some time with Dan Hawkins, too, last summer. How about Dan Hawkins? What did you take away from those conversations?
Well, you know, this is almost, I won't say maybe the far other end of the spectrum, but it's a different approach for sure. And a guy who's been successful. And I met Leach in Key West, you know, and we go on a kind of a history tour of treasure hunts and that place. And then I meet Hawk in a coffee shop on the campus of UC Davis, and talked a lot about structure and aligning everyone in the program, administration, to what our goals are and get everybody on the same page, and you know, some discipline stuff. It was different, but it was valuable in, you know, a different way for me.
I was talking about Ron Rivera, and Amazon has this amazing, amazing video from their series with the Panthers this past season. And it's Ron Rivera at halftime of a game against the Steelers. And again, it was a short week. It was a Thursday night. And they got off to a good start. And then they got lit. They were getting hammered in the first half. So Rivera went into the locker room and got into a couple of guys specifically. And then the entire team. And it's one of the best locker room speeches I've ever seen on any level from any coach anywhere. I mean, like, goosebump stuff.
Don't lose your mind. Don't let them get inside your head. You've got just as much skill and ability as anybody on that damn field. You don't let that push you around. You're too good. But you got to keep your mind in the game and stay focused, all right? Don't let him get to you. You are too good a football player to worry about like that, all right? You go out and do your job. And the rest of you motherfuckers is the same thing. The only thing they've gotten on us has been what? Two long passes. You have to challenge these guys. You can't sit there and accept it. This is their history. This is who the they are. They expect you guys to roll over. You can't. You've got to defy them and challenge their asses. You got to hit the goddamn center in the mouth. That's how you beat these goddamn teams. These teams come out because they think they got big balls. And they challenge your ass. Well, them. Challenge them back. Find out what they're really made of. We got one half of football left. 17 points. We've come back from 17. In fact, we kicked the shit out of somebody with 17. Now get your heads out of your ass and play football.
It's as good as it gets. As I mentioned last hour, I've done this a long time, and I've seen some of the best leaders, best motivators, best managers, best coaches. I've seen and talked to the best to ever do it, and I'm not sure I've ever seen anything that good. That speech from Rivera is one of the best I've ever seen. In fact, and this is where I left off, and I want to think about it, because I could have cut this thing off and not gone there, but I think I will. I haven't seen anything like that. Anything that would compare to the gold standard, the guy, the legend, the icon. Do you know where I'm going with that? When you think of the greatest motivational speech, not speeches, but speech you've ever seen or ever heard, what comes to mind? What is the greatest motivational speech in the history of sports? Who do you think of? What do you think of? To me, it's a no-brainer. That frat bro alum who went back to Drexel to talk to his former flag football team. Do you remember that legend? You may think you remember the entire speech, but you probably don't. And you probably don't remember the context. This is not a member of the team talking. It's a former member of the team. It's a guy who graduated. Maybe. I mean, I don't even know if he graduated. He graduated maybe. But he's gone out into the real world. Now he's coming back to drop knowledge. He's been out there slaying dragons. He's been doing the hero journey. Now he's returned to his flag football team to share the intel that he has gathered in the outside world. To remind the Warriors standing in front of him that no one ever, ever bleeps with the SAEs or the Lambda Chi's or whoever they were. Especially when it comes to flag freaking football. And the knowledge has shown him that his frat rules. And that when it comes to flag football, nobody will dominate his guys. Rivera's halftime speech that Thursday night was the stuff of legend. But he's got nothing on this bro. No one has anything on this bro. Listen and tell me I'm wrong.
Listen. I'm going to tell you this, guys, once. As someone who's been away from this fraternity for as long as I've been away from it, it's not been long. But I know one thing that I've learned in this entire time, that out on that field is where we rule. It doesn't matter what our house looks like, who the we hang out with, what's going on outside of this. This circle, these people in this circle is what matters to you. You are the people I want by my side for the rest of my life. Because out on that field, we are God. Out on that field, we don't take any shit. We're the rulers. We decide what goes, who goes, and when we win and when we lose. Which is never. Every single season I've been a part of this team, we've been winners. Everyone is afraid to play this team. Doesn't matter who the is in it, who the we represent, or who the is going on outside this circle.
That's right.
These are the people that matter, and these are the people you're going to win with. So out on that field, you take it and you leave it, because that's your legacy.
And we're going to get everything. Let's go, boys.
Dude, goosebumps. I've always thought that bro was a legend. Lombardi, Parcells, Belichick, Holtz, Landry, Knoll, all rolled into one. But even I haven't been giving that guy enough credit. And if I haven't, all of you sure as hell haven't. Oh, sure. You remember that part about we decide when we win and we decide when we lose, which is bleeping never? But did you remember his confused and rambling statement at the beginning about being away from the fraternity and what he's learned in all that time, which hasn't been much time at all? Do you remember that when you're out on that flag football team? His fraternity bleeping rules. Did you remember that it doesn't matter what their house looks like or who the bleep they hang out with or what's going on outside of this bleep? Because this circle of fraternity flag football players, that's the only thing that matters. Did you remember that out on that field, we are bleeping gods? We're the bleeping rulers.
We are gods. Out on that field, we don't take any We're the rulers.
No, bro. You're the bleeping god. You're the bleeping ruler. Like, this guy, he's been out in the real world. He's been in the bleep. And he's come back to tell you the real truth in life. The only thing that matters in this messed up, jacked up world is what happens on the field in that fraternity flag football game today. Your life's jacked up. You're broke. Nobody loves you. You don't even love yourself. Who cares? It's flag freaking football. This is all that matters. Man, I can only imagine how hard that frat team played after hearing that speech. They had to be ripping flags off like they never had before. I don't even think that Riverboat Ron quite reached the peaks of that loser frat bro. But he got close. Can I hear it one more time, Albie?
Don't lose your mind. Don't let them get inside your head. You've got just as much skill and ability as anybody on that damn field. You don't let that push you around. You're too good. But you got to keep your mind in the game and stay focused, all right? Don't let him get to you. You are too good a football player to worry about like that, all right? You go out and do your job. And the rest of you motherfuckers is the same thing. The only thing they've gotten on us has been what? Two long passes. You have to challenge these guys. You can't sit there and accept it. This is their history. This is who the they are. They expect you guys to roll over. You can't. You've got to defy them and challenge their asses. You've got to hit the goddamn center in the mouth. That's how you beat these goddamn teams. These teams come out because they think they got big balls. And they challenge your ass. Well, them. Challenge them back. Find out what they're really made of. We got one half of football left. 17 points. We've come back from 17. In fact, we kicked the shit out of somebody with 17. Now get your heads out of your ass and play football.
It's a tough call, right? You tell me, which speech was better? Which was more motivational? Which had more heat? You tell me who you'd rather play for, Ron Rivera or that frat bro. Which was the better speech? Two of the best of all time. So, you might be wondering, what happened? What did happen in those two respective games? I have no idea what happened to those bros. But the Panthers, as you recall, went into halftime. They were down 31-14. That's why Ron Rivera was so pissed. They were down 31-14. After that speech, they ran out onto the field and they lost 52-21. In other words, not only did they not come back from down 17, they took that speech and they lost by 31. In other words, they did not get their heads out their asses. They got their asses handed to them. And that was the start of a 7-game losing streak. That makes no sense to me at all. One of the best speeches ever. They turned a 17-point deficit into a 31-point hospital job and parlayed that into a 7-game losing streak? Are you kidding me? I felt like Odell Beckham after hearing that speech. But you know what? That's not Ron Rivera's fault. He left it all out there. He gave everyone the fire. They just couldn't handle it. And they were banged up. And they were busted up. But that's not on Ron. And I don't know what happened in that flag football game, but if that frat got its ass kicked, that's not on that bro either. Because like Rivera, that bro did his job. And if they lost, it's because his bros couldn't handle his fire. In fact, nobody's ever done a better job than that bro did. I'd give anything. Like, I've interviewed Ron Rivera, and I appreciate the time I've spent with him, But I'd give anything to be in the presence and feel the heat of that frat bro. Long live that bro.
Everyone is afraid to play this team.
Long live that bro. David Forst is my guest. David, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. Thanks for inviting me back in.
It's so good to have you back in. So let me start here. David, you're coming off a tough loss to the Astros yesterday in Houston. It capped off a 7-game road trip to Minnesota in Houston. I know it's still July, but when you're facing those two teams, did it have a bit of a postseason feel to it?
Oh, it absolutely did. Yeah, I mean, those games, the games in Minnesota were, you know, we went 2-2 there, back and forth games. You know, that team hits homers with the best of them, so it was good to measure up there. And, you know, going down to Houston is always a test. We know the AL West goes through those guys, and we haven't played very well in their building, but we competed well yesterday, came out with a good win Tuesday night, and we'll move forward from there.
All right, so overall, you go 3-4 on the road trip, which is not ideal, I'm sure. But at the same time, with one exception, there were tight games. So what do you make of the way the team responded to the challenge of that road trip and how they played?
Really pleased with it. And I talked to Bob over the course of the trip, and he was really happy with how the guys, like you said, they bounced back. You know, we were down in some games, a couple late wins. We've got a really resilient group here. And you know, we can score runs late. We've moved some guys around in our pen who've performed, and you know, hopefully here over the next week up until the deadline, maybe try and add some guys to this club.
I'm going to follow you up on that in a minute. David Forrest is joining us. When you talk about the resilience of the club, resiliency, if we go back to the middle of May, the team was 6 games under 500. What kind of thoughts were you having at that point of the season?
You know, unfortunately here, we've gotten a little bit used to the slow starts and know that our team kind of gets better as the season goes along. It would be a lot easier on all of us if we played well out of the gate. But, you know, the nature of our team, we always have a lot of turnover. We've always got new guys, and it just takes a little while for everybody to kind of figure out where they fit. So we don't get too worried around here about, you know, being a few games under in April and May. We always feel like this is a team built to peak in the second half. And they've, you know, once again, like we did last year, this team has proven that they're going to take off.
It's happening once again. I mean, since that point, you're 39-20. So I guess in part, David, it kind of answers the question with the turnover, guys need to settle in. Has that been the biggest change and the biggest difference since the early part of the season? Or maybe has it been something else?
No, I think it is, guys, just settling in. I mean, look, we missed Matt Olson for the first 6 weeks. He broke his hamate when we were in Japan, and we missed his bat quite a bit. And frankly, the Gold Glove defense at first doesn't hurt either. So that was kind of a missing piece in April and May. And when we got Ole back, things turned around on a couple fronts. I think Matt Chapman settled in front of Ole in the lineup, and you just kind of saw things click. But the other thing is our starting pitching has been fantastic. Mike Fiers kind of took the lead here, and he's been our ace. And everybody's kind of fallen in line, and those guys have really pitched well since about middle of May.
David Forrest, my guest. It's funny you mentioned those two guys. Well, not funny. I was going to get there anyway, but I want to ask you about them too. Specifically, there's this great quote from starting pitcher Chris Bassitt that jumped out to me. He said, quote, Matt Chapman and Matt Olson came up and they changed the culture around here. You can easily go back and say, hey, when did this all change? All these young guys changed the culture here, end quote. I mean, to me, that's an amazing quote. What's it say about Chapman and Olson that the vets are saying the culture changed when the young guys arrived?
Yeah, I think Chris hit it on the nose there. I mean, we had a group of guys, you know, with Ole and Chapman, Chad Pinder's part of that, guys who won in the minor leagues and kind of brought that with them. You know, we had a couple rough years in 15, 16, 17, and when those guys came up around the middle of 17, you know, they had an attitude like, hey, we've kind of won everywhere we've been. Why should the big leagues be any different? And look, you're talking about two guys on the corners who are legitimate superstars. I mean, we may not get the run because we're on the West Coast and not everybody sees them, but, you know, Gold Glovers, Chapman won the Platinum Glove last year, was an All-Star this year. They're legitimate stars, and they've changed the makeup of this group.
So do those guys like it that way? Would they rather be kind of off the radar and not be right front and center of everybody, or is there part of those guys that want to say, hey, look, man, what we're doing here is really pretty significant, and you're just not seeing it, and we're not getting the run or the attention we deserve because of where we're doing it? Does that bother them?
Yeah, you probably have to ask ask Matt and Matt. I think Chappie is the guy who takes a lot of pride in what he does, and I think he likes the notice. I know he was proud of being named an All-Star and being in the Derby. Matt Olson's a little more understated than Chap, and he flies under the radar. But all these guys deserve the recognition. They're having great years.
You know, David, I mentioned Encino Little League off the top, but when you think about Chapman coming out of Cal State Fullerton, that is an absolute baseball power, isn't it?
Without a doubt, yeah. I mean, there's guys all over the big leagues. I mean, Chris Davis in our lineup's a Fullerton guy. Mark Kotze, who's a longtime A. I mean, the list of guys who've just come through here is huge from Fullerton. But, yeah, around the big leagues, everybody knows about the Titans.
Especially in this area around here with youth baseball, there's a lot of guys who went there that are coaching the kids that are coming up here. Then you've got Ramon Laureano. He's in his first full season with the team. In fact, we're not even at the one-year anniversary, David, of his MLB debut. And all he's done this year is hit .283, 20 home runs, tied for the league lead among center fielders and outfield assists, named AL Player of the Week this week. When you look at the different ways and all the ways he can impact a game, how pumped do you get?
No, I mean, this guy shows up on a highlight every week, it seems like. And, you know, I think everybody in the game knows about the throw he made in Anaheim last year to kind of announce his presence on the scene. But he's a fun guy to have. He impacts the game in so many ways. And he busts his ass out there too. He plays hard, runs into walls, and he's been great to put in the middle of our lineup and the middle of the diamond.
I got to ask you, when he came over in a trade with Houston back in November of 17, Billy Owens, your director of player personnel, saw him a while back when he was still in the minors. He wrote up a report on him. What do you remember about that report and how much Owens liked him as a player?
Yeah, it's good to give Billy O credit on that one, because he did see him, he saw him in Double A, and you know, Ramon had kind of a down year before we traded for him, which was, you know, the only reason he was available. But Billy Owens was on this guy. He said exactly, you know, what I just talked about, how many different ways he can impact the game, how hard he plays, and you can't help but notice him on the field. So you know, our scouts did a nice job on that one, and Ramon's an impact guy here.
David Forrest joins me for a couple of more moments. It's July 25th, and as you mentioned, David, the trade deadline's coming up. You've already made the move to add Homer Bailey. He had a nice debut and then a tough second outing, but overall, what do you like about what he brings to your team?
I think Homer gives us just an additional depth in the rotation. He pitched great in Kansas City, changed up his repertoire a little bit. The guy's such an intense competitor that, you know, he's not going to blink as long as we stay in a pennant race. So, yeah, he got roughed up a little in Houston the other day. He's not the only guy on our staff that owns that distinction. So I'm looking forward to his next start against the Rangers this weekend.
I chuckled. I was going to say that's not the only guy that's going to happen to, no matter who goes up against those bats. So what are the next few days like for you as you approach the deadline? For instance, do you have a plan, and are you working it, or are things pretty fluid?
Things are pretty fluid, I'd say. I mean, we've been on the phones for the past couple of weeks. Billy and I kind of, you know, split up everybody and try and touch base with each team. And, you know, we know what we're looking for. You know, bullpen has been a priority for us, still out there looking for starters. But just, you know, a way to help this group out, because, like I said, they have played great the last 2 months. We are in the wild card spot today with a handful of teams chasing us. I mean, Tampa's not going away. Boston, Anaheim's only 4 games back. So this is going to be a fight till the end. We knew we had to pull away last year just to get in that second spot, and I don't expect this year's race is going to be any different.
Yeah, David, you know how long I've done this, and I know how long that you've listened to this show, and now you come on as a guest. Billy Beane used to come on quite a bit way back in the day. What's it been like to work with Billy Beane?
Billy's great. He, you know, this is my 20th year working alongside him, and that's actually the best word I can use, because from the minute I got in here 20 years ago, Billy's kept me alongside for everything, and it's never been, you know, he's on top and everybody else is underneath him. We run a pretty flat organization here. Everybody gets a voice. Everybody contributes, and Billy's been great to me.
God, 20 years, that's amazing, with the same organization, working in the same for the same person all that time. How much pride do you have in this sort of longevity and the time you've spent with that organization?
A lot, yeah. It's something that I think about a lot, how lucky I've been to stay in one place, able to move up in this organization. You know, they've treated me very well, and I kind of feel like a NorCal native now after growing up in the shadow of Encino Little League. I'm kind of a NorCal guy now.
My man. Let's not get crazy, all right? I understand that. I respect and admire everything you've said this entire conversation. I don't know. You know how much y'all, how much they hate our guts. You know this. You remember when you first got there, right? The way that NorCal would respond to SoCal. They hate us.
I do, though. I feel like being on this side of the bay and rooting against the Giants has kind of kept me with some credibility, so I can still hold on to that.
All right, good. Just never forget where you're from. The pride of Encino Little League. He was a third-team All-American at Harvard and was named GM in October 2015. David, I appreciate the relationship, and it's always good to have you on this show. Thanks so much.
Jim, thanks so much for having me. We'll take all the karma we can get the next 2 months.
You got it. Love to give it to you. Corey Legit is my guest. Corey, it's good to have you on. How are you?
I'm great. How about yourself, Jim?
Good. Listen, before we get into the details of the offseason and your gift to the University of Illinois, bring me up to date. How are you doing? How is your life right now? What are you thinking about?
Right now, my life it consists of me training, rehabbing, and doing everything to get better and get ready for the season for whichever team plans on signing me in the near future.
All right, then.
It's looking good for me.
I was going to say, the Chargers announced earlier this year that they would not be picking up your option for this year. Corey, you understand that this is a business. You understand that they will always say, it's not personal. Does it feel personal, though? And what was it like when you got that news?
No, it's not personal at all. I never take the game of football personal at all. It's always business. And you just got to know. You just got to know that. And once you have that mindset, everything will fall into play for you. But when I got the news, yeah, at first I was disappointed. I was like, dang. You know, if it wasn't, I blamed it on the injury. I blamed it on me doing a lot of things wrong. But at the end of the day, I sat back and I looked at it and I said, hey, they made the choice to move on. And I just got to go prove to the next team that, hey, I am worth taking a shot on.
You know, Corey, I really respect that. I admire that response a lot. I mean, that's not an easy way to look at that. That's the right way to look at it to me, but it's not an easy way to look at it. At the same time, though, Corey, when guys take things personally and they use it as fuel, I understand that as well. Are you just not built that way, or is that just not the type of thing that motivates you, that you're not going to turn that negative fuel into a positive?
Yeah, I mean, I don't take it personal because the owner of the team is still going to own his team, and that franchise is going to stay in their family for generations to come. I'm just a guy that's coming through, you know, that just so happened to meet them and play for their team. So I don't take it personal at the end of the day because I'm getting as much out of the NFL as the NFL has gotten out of me, you know. So I'm not. I mean, I can live my life and never play for another down of football again. I'm fine. My kids are great. They got a great life ahead of them. So do I. The NFL's been nothing but great to me, and that's how a lot of players should look at it. You know, don't take it personal at all. So me, I'm not the type of person that takes it personal, but I will say I am using it as fuel to drive me for next year. And whatever season, whatever team I do go play for, I want to just have a great year, you know, just because I know I still have a lot in the tank.
Corey Legit joining us. All right, so what are you looking for in a team and a situation? And then on the flip side, what is the team getting when they bring you in now?
I'm looking for a team that's going to allow me to penetrate and be a three technique and just go play the style of defense I played under Coach Gus Bradley and John Pagano. You know, just play that vicious attack three technique style. And what they're going to get from me is a guy that's just going to come work at each and every day and on Sunday and just going to give his all, you know, and not stir up anything and just go to work, you know, put in work in short and let my film talk for itself. You know, I've been that type of way. I've been that way my whole career, just let my actions speak for myself.
You know, Corey, I appreciate that too. Now, from the outside, it would seem like you've got a lot of interests and options outside of football. And while I understand that they're going to be there no matter what, is there any part of you that thinks that this could be the perfect opportunity and that if the perfect team does not come along, you might be ready to move into the next chapter of your life? Or are you still all in on football no matter what?
Yes, right now I'm all in on football, but I do have other business ventures outside of football that I have going that's earning and turning. So, but football, I am all in on it, but everything else just take care of itself. And everyone knows all that other business comes second to football right now.
Corey Legit joining us. All right, now I know how much you love the Chargers and the level of respect that you have for Melvin Gordon, both as a player and as a teammate. How do you see that contract situation playing out?
And I'm hoping, I'm praying that the Chargers do right by him because he's been a guy that's came to work each and every day, never complained, never anything, not a troubled guy. I say pay the guy. I'm hoping that they pay him, and I just hope it works out to the benefits of him because he well deserves it. I mean, I've seen the guy transition from his rookie year to now. He's a totally different player. He's a guy that works. I mean, he always worked hard, but now he's a guy that needs to get paid. He deserves whatever dollar amount he's asking for. Give it to him.
Hey, Corey, how different is he?
He helps the offense go.
Right. How is he different now as a player than when he first came in?
You could tell his rookie year, he was a little timid. And myself and Melvin Ingram got on him a couple of times, like, man, just run. You know, you got it, and you just run the ball. You can do it. You can do it. And, you know, we seen him develop into the guy that just wasn't thinking no more. He was just out there reacting. I think he was a little starstruck under the lights at first, you know, playing against some of the NFL guys and whatnot. But him developing from that guy, didn't want to, you know, that was a little thinking a little too much, to where he just now he's reacting. And now you see the guy had, well, 14 touchdowns and some odd crazy number of yards. I mean, he's been very consistent, and I love it.
Corey Legia joining us. Corey, one more thought about the Chargers on that topic, because this is a huge Philip Rivers house. I've got so much respect for him. From the perspective of a defensive lineman, what do you see when you watch Rivers play?
I watch a guy that can pick you apart. I mean, he knows your whole defense in and out. I mean, as soon as we get on a plane from a finishing game, if we have a away game, as soon as we get on the plane, Phil has the computer and he's already watching film on the next opponent. So me watching him, I know for a fact that Phil is already ahead of the game, and he knows what the defense and what style of defense they're going to run, what their plays are going to look like, what the personnel is. Me as a defensive lineman, I see a guy that can pick you apart, and he's just Phillip. He's just a bad son of a gun that can just flat out play football.
Corey, I think most fans.
Hall of Famer.
In fact, yeah, Hall of Famer. I was going to say most fans, I mean all fans. I don't think fans have any idea what players deal with, especially in the NFL when it comes to injury. Last year you had a knee injury, and as a result you were not able to get on the field as much as you would have liked. What was that experience like to watch your team go to battle without you? How challenging was that for you personally?
It was tough. It's tough. Anytime you sit out of a game, it's tough. I mean, I remember me going to Coach A. Lynn's office and begging him to let me play his first year, a game that he wanted me to sit out because of I had a very bad back injury and some feet stuff going on. And I begged him to let me play, and I got very emotional in the office. And he was like, listen, for the sake of the team, I just want to rest you, you know. So no player wants to sit out of a game, and being injured sucks. Missing practices sucks. Missing games is just something that's not in a lot of guys' DNA, especially for me. But, you know, it sucks. That's all I can possibly say about it. It sucks to sit and watch your team go deep into the playoffs, and you're not able to go out there and help. You know,
Corey Legia joining us. I was going to ask you, like, what is that? But I think you laid that out. It's just DNA. It's just the way you're wired. I mentioned off the top, Corey, that you were the team's nominee for Walter Payton Man of the Year last year, and that's a tremendous honor. You have always been extremely active off the field, including your work with the American Heart Association, and that started after your son, Corey Jr., was born with what's known as ASD and VSD. What was your reaction when you first heard that about your son?
It was a very tough and gut-wrenching deal. I've never experienced anything like it. So when it's your son, you know, it's definitely different. When you hear from other people, you're like, you know, they'll get through it. But when it's your son and you're in the middle of it, it's very tough. It was something that it was a life experience that I'll never forget, seeing other families in the hospital battling some of the same conditions that we were and that couldn't quite afford it to get the procedure done. And that's why I partnered up with the American Heart Association, because they bring awareness to families that don't know quite as much about what American Heart Association does and some of the things that they bring, you know, as far as the resources to other people. So me personally, that's why I truly just honestly, I mean, it was one of the toughest things I ever had to deal with was my son having to have heart surgery a couple weeks after being born and having his chest cracked open. It was tough for me, but his mother felt most of the pain because she carried him. So I sympathize with her more than anything, because she went through it way more than me. I had to go back to work at some point in time, but she was there day in and day out in the hospital with him.
I mean, Corey, that's terrifying. Heart surgery for an infant. So bring me up to date. How is Corey Jr. doing right now?
Now he's playing basketball this year. My son is out there. He's playing football also this season. He played basketball this year. He scored a couple buckets. I'm going to work with him on his skill development some more. He's one of the most playful and exciting kids you'll ever see, you'll ever be around. I mean, if he was in your studio, he'd be in there tearing it all around. He'd be in there tearing it up and asking every question on what does this do? What does that does? How does this work? And what does it do? So he's one of those very inquisitive kids, and he's very smart. He's very bright.
Man, that's awesome. That is so great to hear. All right, so before you go, earlier this month, you made a really generous gift to the University of Illinois, and as a result, the Players Lounge is now named after you. Why was that something that was important to you, and what's it mean to have that name, your name, on the Players Lounge?
To me, it means a lot because the University of Illinois has altered my life. Transitioned from a kid from Miami that grew up in poverty and very dirt poor to going to the University of Illinois, graduating from there, earning my degree. And now it's something that I can tell my kids, hey, I got my degree from the University of Illinois, and also a piece of me and a piece of us are at the University of Illinois forever. You know, the Player Lounge will be named after me. And also just to help with recruiting, just to show guys that, hey, University of Illinois, we do produce first-round draft picks. We produce guys in the NFL that has had successful careers and a great stay at the University of Illinois and a great stay in the NFL. So for me, it was a very easy deal to do. The University of Illinois has been nothing but great to me. I appreciate the Illini Nation and everything that they stand for, and I just can't wait to get back there and see the Player Lounge all complete and done.
And then, Corey, last thing, it's not just Illinois. You also went back to Stoneman Douglas High School, and you funded a scholarship. And listen, I could keep running down these list of things that you've done in the community. My question is, because you keep on giving back, where did this desire to impact people and help people come from?
Because someone took a chance on me. Someone took a chance on me when I was just a kid running around in Miami without a direction. And if I can just reach one or two kids in my lifetime to change their life like someone did for me, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, he did for me one time when I went and saw him at an event. It was a very incredible and very gut-wrenching deal. So just to see him, and he changed, he altered my life of what I can become here in this world. And that's all I want to do for another kid, is just be that one inspiration to change one kid's life to be in a better situation than they are currently in.
So before I let you go, I got to ask, so what was it that The Rock said? Was that a conversation you had with him? Was that part of a speech that he made? What did he say that impacted you so greatly?
It was a speech that he did back in the early 2000s. Late 90s. It was at an event in Miami. He just basically was telling the kids, you can become, it's a very standard speech, but hearing it come from him, because at that time I was very into wrestling. Like, I love wrestling. And he just let us know, like, hey, you can become whatever you want to be in this world. You just have to go out and achieve it and put everything you have into it. And it sounds very, very basic, but at that moment, coming from him, it meant the world to me. And ever since then, I've been working my ass off to get to where I am at.
Good night now!